This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show for Wednesday, August 17th. I'm going to play a little Stevie Wonder to get us started off. With Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show. I'm Dick Paddock, engineer and quizmaster and sometime contributor. And our host today is Tana Hartman.
Hi, Dick. Welcome, everybody. Today, we're going to talk about deep green resistance. This is the title of a book by Eric McBay, Leary Keith, and Derek Jensen. Derek Jensen is probably the best known of them, but these are three activists, writers, and at least Eric and Leary are small-scale organic farmers. But all three of them share a vision of how we can basically save the planet that is in ecological meltdown. There is, if you are paying attention, sufficient evidence now to say we're facing tremendous catastrophes worldwide. And if we don't do something about it, and something dramatic and radical, we are leaving a world to our children and grandchildren that is going to be basically uninhabitable and truly miserable for them. Deep green resistance starts with the acknowledgement that industrial civilization has created the circumstances for an unsustainable life on this planet. The goal of deep green resistance is to deprive the industrial corporate capitalist system of its ability to steal from the poor and to deplete the earth and to deprive the powerful of their ability to dominate and destroy. This will entail defending and rebuilding just, sustainable, renewable human communities that are grounded on repaired, restored land bases. And it's a huge, huge undertaking. But these three people have given it a lot of thought. I highly recommend you look at the book. And they believe it can be done. This is not a revolution of the sort that we've been accustomed to thinking about and imagining, you know, violent revolutions, overturning, overthrow of the government. That is not what this is about. I repeat, not what this is about. This is about fighting back.
A moment. I think I may have missed the station ID. This is WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro.
Okay. Sorry. Are we okay out there then? All right. Any strategy that aims for a just future has to include a call to build direct democracies based on human rights and sustainable material cultures. Deep green resistance is about that, about stopping the industrial devastation of the planet and about creating sustainable democracies. Like you, probably, I have a lot of friends and family members who are very good people, well-meaning people. But they are usually or often blind to and ignorant of the truth about our corporate capitalist industrial civilization. Our culture, a global culture, and corporate capitalism are destroying the planet and the future of our children and grandchildren. Now, part of me understands that the unwillingness to face this awful truth. It's ugly. It's painful. A bigger and I think stronger part of me, however, is very sad and outraged because I know, and I use that term advisedly, that we cannot be moral people if we are unwilling to open our hearts and our eyes to see the damage that our civilization is causing. We are killing billions of life forms, not just human beings, but all kinds of life forms. 200 species go extinct every day. We are living in a period of mass extinctions, and these are not extinctions, for the most part, that are unavoidable. They could be avoided. We, by burning fossil fuels, are killing this planet. Now, logic says, well, if burning fossil fuels is killing the planet, then stop it. Unfortunately, it's a little more complicated than that, given our culture. Industrialization, capitalism, and patriarchy have, for a long time, dominated our culture, our way of thinking, our ways of living. Everything is dedicated to and shaped to ensure, promote, protect profits. And we've got to stop deluding ourselves that we can continue on this path without devastating consequences.
I wanted to ask you, I recall that last week we were working over Robert Jensen's paper.
Yes.
You should be able to link those up because delusion.
Yes, yes, yes.
The delusion revolution.
Last week I talked about Robert Jensen, who's a professor at the University of Texas in Austin, professor of journalism. Has been writing for years, and he recently published an article or an op-ed on Truth Out called Nature Bats Last, Revolution and Redemption, Revelation, and Oh, I'm sorry. Shoot, I can't remember the full title of it. But Nature Bats Last. Google it on Truth Out. And he is talking about the three great, I guess, developments of our history movement. Right.
Three great
revolutions, he calls them.
Right.
That is the agricultural, where the hunter gatherers began to
cultivate
foods. Then the industrial. We know what that one was. We've all studied it in school. Although we looked at it typically, we're taught that it is this great and wonderful thing that brought prosperity to the earth, to its people. In fact, it has brought a great deal of destruction. And the third revolution, according to Jensen, is in communications, and he calls it the delusional. That came with the rise of mass media and a system that has increasingly taught us that it keeps us entertained and amused and distracted from what's really happening. It turns us into consumers, and we're taught this from our birth on through the television and movies and newspapers and all of our mass media, basically, is there to create consumers, to keep us consuming, even if we don't have the money for it. We're told, as George Bush once said, go out and shop.
Right.
What's that song? Sure. There's that song we were just listening to where, it's Dave Lippmann, he says,
yes.
Some of you have been seen out in public, not shopping. But anyway, Jensen, and I think there would be, I'm not going to say that they are completely in agreement on things. I think that Deep Green Resistance is a movement that is more radical than Professor Jensen endorses. But they agree a lot on where we are and where we seem to be headed. Now, how we turn that around or stop it, they may not agree on. But both of them are worth paying attention to. Again, Professor Robert Jensen, and this is Derek Jensen, Eric McBay, and Larry Keith. Now, I hope I'm saying her name right. That's the way I heard it pronounced. Jensen has pointed out somewhere that it's not enough. All these nice individual solutions that are offered to us, telling us if we just carry our bags to the grocery store, if we use the low-power...
low-power light bulbs.
Light bulbs.
Yeah, highly efficient.
Whatever, yes, highly bulbs, efficient, right. Emitting huge numbers of EMFs,
right.
That then create cancer in our children. But he's saying that even if every single one of us took every single action that was proposed by people like Al Gore, it would reduce our greenhouse gas emissions only by 21%.
Which means that 79% still,
that's right,
still coming out.
And Eric McBay says that even if through simple living and rigorous recycling, you can stop your own, the average American's, annual one-ton production of garbage, that your per capita share of the industrial waste that is produced in the U.S. alone is still almost 26 tons. That is 37 times as much waste as you would be able to save by eliminating a full 100% of your personal waste. Industrialism is what has to stop. There is no, and I'm quoting from Deep Green Resistance, there is no kinder, greener version that will do the trick of leaving us a living planet. In blunt terms, industrialization is a process of taking entire communities of living beings and turning them into commodities and dead zones. Now, we could use a little less fossil fuel, but we still end up with the same wastelands of land and water and air. We can prolong the process, but we need to stop it.
There are two, from my point of view, there are two basic reservoirs of that we can't do without. One is the reservoir of energy, which we're using up, and the other is the reservoir of air and water, which I take together because they're the basic elements of life. And using up one causes us to accelerate using up the other. And so we need to find a way, particularly since the fossil fuels are not ultimately sustainable. We eventually will run out of them, no matter if you do it fast or slow. Eventually you'll run out of them, and so you have to switch over. And the time to switch over is, well, it may be past. But we have to remember that we have to preserve the other reservoir. And, of course, that also includes the life that's in that reservoir. We have to preserve that, too.
Absolutely, Dick. The principle is simple. Any social system that is based on the use of non-renewable sources is, by definition, unsustainable. And just to be clear, Jensen says non-renewable means it will eventually run out. And it turns out it's running out, much of it is running out faster than we imagined. But if we can get our minds around this, if we can face it, if we can accept it, if we can take heart and take courage and confront the truth, then we find that we can assume the responsibility for changing this tragic state of affairs. For sustainable to mean anything, we have to embrace and defend the bare truth. This planet, our planet, is primary. It's paramount. It is irreplaceable for us. So, what are our options? Well, theoretically, the human race, on the whole, could take a look, a good hard look at itself and at the situation, and make some very hard decisions. Hard decisions, but fair decisions that would include an equitable distribution of both resources and justice, that would respect and embrace the limits of our planet, of our ecosphere. But unfortunately, none of the institutions that govern our lives, from the economic to the political to the religious, are on the side of justice or sustainability. No matter how many feel-good, greenwashed ads you see, it is our culture, our society, our civilization that is the problem. And stopgap measures are not going to help us. They are not going to make a big enough difference. And even if we could get everybody to agree, and our governments and all the large corporations to take the action needed, which is virtually impossible given the ideology of capitalism, it would take perhaps more time than we have. So what other options do we have? We cannot consume our way out of environmental collapse. Consumption is the problem. But individual consumption, controlling that, although good and reasonable, is not enough. We have to do more. And since none of us can just walk away from life on this planet, we have to decide what we are going to do about it. Well, this book, Deep Green Resistance, it's changing the way I think about a number of things. And I highly recommend those of you out there who are maybe listening, if you care and really care about this planet, and not just the kind of caring that says, oh, let's wring our hands and you know, pray, but the kind that says, if there is something I can do, I want to learn what that is, and I will do it. I will do what it takes to bring about a just and sustainable future, a just and sustainable world. So what is this deep green resistance really about? It recognizes, one, that this culture is insane and that it has to change. That the way it's constructed now, it requires empires and colonies to dominate and destroy. It requires what Lierre Keith calls a steady supply of hierarchy, objectification, and violence. Deep Green Resistance also embraces the necessity of political struggle. This isn't a liberal movement. And make no mistake about it, oppression is not a mistake. And changing our individual hearts and minds, although important, critical, is not enough. It is not a viable strategy. Political struggle has to start happening at every level and in every arena if we are to avert the very worst of ecological disasters, and if we are to create a culture that is worth the name culture. And by political struggle, she says specifically, she is talking specifically about institutional change. And whether it is by reform or by replacement, or probably by both. There is a place, by the way, for both reform and more radical resistance and more radical measures. And fighting all this is not going to be easy. We know from history, we know in our guts, that resisting the power structure will meet with retaliation. But that's no reason that we shouldn't fight it. In grad school, I studied German history, particularly modern Germany, because I grew up partly in Germany, and I spent a good part of my life trying to understand how the Nazis could come to power, how they could have been allowed to do what they did, to kill 11 million people in a systematic extermination effort. The thing is, our culture is killing people on an even grander scale, and it is pretending that it is not. We have to do something. Remember the, now who was it? Now I'm drawing a blank, my own memory. All that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. I think the actual phrase, the term was good men to do nothing, but in this day and age, we're going to say good people to do nothing.
Do you remember the Eichmann quote?
No, say.
I don't know. I seem to recall that at some point when he was being tried after the war,
uh-huh.
He was asked, how is it that you could do something like that? And he said, nobody suggested otherwise.
Nobody suggested otherwise. No, that's good. Oh, God. Yes. That's it. You see, which brings me back to our culture. All of these wonderful environmental organizations and such, they all offer, you know, great things we can do, but not one of them, or very few of them, I should say now, because I think more, there are one or two that are beginning. None of them questions the culture, the civilization that we are in, and the motives of this civilization, which are, you know, domination and profit. It's all for profit, you know. Control and dominate for profit. Why are we not questioning our culture? And not just Republicans versus Democrats, because frankly, there's not a dime's worth of difference between those two parties. They're both parties that are bought and paid for by corporate capitalism. And I know there are those of you who, the minute you use the word capitalism or, you know, or challenge the status quo, you're considered a left radical, you know, a communist, one person called me, one man, a communist or socialist. Now, he revised it downward to socialism. But the truth is, the real socialists among us are corporations and the wealthy. They're the ones that are getting the benefits of the handouts from our government. Not ordinary people, not you and I.
And there is another way to look at communist, and that is in terms of community. And we have to get together as a community and work it out. And, of course, there are those who will say that Jesus was a communist.
I don't know if I've heard that one before. I've heard
really?
He was a socialist.
Yeah, well, yeah, either a socialist or a communist. But in fact, they lived in communities. The early Christians lived in communities of exactly the kind that people point to. And, you know, functionally, they were the same kind of communists as Karl Marx promoted, because they lived from each according to what he can produce, to each according to their needs.
Right.
And that's exactly what we're talking about here.
That we have a long history of propaganda in this country that terrifies people, if you say socialism or communism. But you really ought to look at them. Look at them a little more dispassionately. And not, we're not promoting communism or even socialism, although I happen to believe that social democracy is a good thing. But what we are talking about is to accept blindly that capitalism is a good thing is wrong, just flat wrong. Every movement for justice has struggled with a number of things, among them violence, property destruction. Now, in our culture, many times, the destruction of property is considered a worse crime than physical violence against another human being. It depends on whom we're being violent against, I suppose. You know, our government uses our military to destroy countries, to impose our will. And I can almost see some cringes that, oh my God, we fought a good war. We fought our last good war may have been against the Nazis, right? And I'm not even so sure that, I mean, war in it of itself is a dreadful thing. But the last, I think, justifiable military action this country took was Germany, 1945.
Yeah, 39 to 45.
Since then, we have a history of invading countries in order to prop up governments so that would see things our way, you know, allow our corporations to do business there. and to destroy their social infrastructures in order to make room for the consolidation of wealth by industrialists moving into the country, multinational corporations. But I don't want to get too far afield there. I'm talking about what deep grid resistance is. And one of the things it has to be is multi-level. It's got to be both above ground and underground. It's got to be political, economic, social. It's got to be legal. And I don't mean all the actions legal. I mean we've got to work in the legal arena, although it's set up currently, our whole legal judicial system is set up to keep us trapped in these battles, struggles for reform and justice that in fact never go anywhere because those with the money and power can keep it tied up for years and years and years.
Donna, I think we need to take a little break now. It's
okay.
Half past the hour.
Let's do that.
This is WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. If you're listening over the air or would like to, it's 103.5 FM. And you can find the website at wcomfm.org. And if you want to stream live because you're having trouble getting the signal of this low-power 100-watt FM station, you can go to the WCOMFM.org website and click on the Listen Live Stream button. And you'll be, that is, if you have internet connection and a computer, you can do that. We archive our shows on the WILF website, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. The website is named Triangle, WILPF.org. And we bring you this show every week from 5 to 6 on Wednesday afternoons. Our underwriter that we are very happy to have as the underwriter is Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. They are a place where you can get, for example, Deep Green Resistance. Did you get yours there?
I did indeed.
Yeah, okay.
Right off the shelf. You might have to order it, but do. It's worth it.
Right. So they have other cultural advantages. They have magazines that you won't find in lots of other places. They have events that they sponsor. And they have one of my favorites, the bumper stickers. sorry about that. But we encourage you to patronize Internationalist Bookstore. You can find them on the web at internationalistbooks.org. Go ahead, Donna. You had something to say?
I was just going to say, I don't think we're supposed to say patronize on.
Oh.
Yes, on.
Okay. I had that brought up to me recently, yeah. And then I listened to Solomon and wasn't so sure anymore.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, we'll check that out, exactly.
Yes.
What the wording is that we can use. Anyway, we're back talking about deep green resistance, what it is, what it's not. Deep green resistance requires that we repair the planet and that we repair human culture, both. It's not one or the other. Repairing the planet means that, first of all, we have to know what the damage is that we've done. Now, there's a lot of scientific data out there showing our oceans are 90% dead now. I mean, they're really... There's more plastic than water almost out there in that great, you know, South Pacific whirl.
I think it technically there's more plastic than there is oxygen, but
more plastic. Well, that's encouraging because this is supposed to be a source of our oxygen.
That's
now,
right.
Just imagine when you're breathing plastic instead of oxygen.
As a matter of fact, that is where the plankton generated a lot of the oxygen that we breathe. We think about it being in the forests. In jungles, in places like the Amazon, but it also comes out of the plankton in the ocean.
Yeah. Yeah, Dick is my go-to guy for science and technology issues.
Miscellaneous useless trivia.
Hardly useless. Excuse me. Repairing the earth is something that is going to take a long time, but creating sustainable agriculture is one way to do it. We've got to move away from the industrial agriculture. Stop buying those, you know, GMO and hybrid seeds out there to plant in your garden. Pay attention to the seeds you're getting. Where do they come from? What are they?
Yeah, and if you doubt that that GMO seeds are something to be concerned about, recognize that corporations who are producing these GMO seeds design them so that they will be that the seeds require inputs that you have to buy, and B are not are sterile when when they bear fruit, so that you have to buy the seeds again next year, which is different than has been going on for untold generations.
Centuries, millennia.
Millennia.
Yeah.
Whenever they started doing agriculture, they started keeping seed corn
saving
for
seeds
of whatever for
right.
The, for
and
the
now
next year.
Monsanto and the other ADS and other, you know, multinational agribusinesses are, you know, trying to do away that. They're trying to control it both legally to see that it becomes illegal for people to save their seeds. But there, for instance, I visited Nicaragua a few years ago. Now, I went down with Witness for Peace, and one of the things I was interested in looking at was how our, you know, foreign policies had affected the Nicaraguan people. What I found was tremendous devastation, of course, because of the free trade zones. But a program that really I wasn't expecting to see that astounded me was a program that I don't remember if it was ADS or Monsanto now, but they were asking the farmers to bring in their seeds, and they would give you 2 for 1. They would give the farmer 2 pounds of their GMO, high-tech, you know, highly
super whiz-bang,
praised seeds, yes, for 1 pound of the native seeds. Now, basically what this ultimately has done is has made the farmers dependent on the chemical seeds.
Chemical-requiring seeds,
yeah,
right.
The seeds that require chemical fertilizers and such. And those seeds, as they spread and as the plants spread, you know, the crops become, they are sterile. Those seeds are sterile, as Dick pointed out. And it has caused great devastation among the small farmers in Nicaragua.
Yeah, and the other thing that corporations are trying to do now is they are trying to ensure that if a food product processed all to hell, of course, it contains GMO seeds, it would be nice to know so you could at least make the choice. They're trying to make it illegal to label.
To disclose that there's GMO, because it might hurt their profits.
Right.
Right.
Which, of course, is all that's important. It's just like
their profit. Everything's for profit in our society. Right.
Yeah.
And we go along with it. We allow ourselves to be misled and lied to and brainwashed. And it's time we stopped and started paying careful attention, question those ads and the assertions that
question
they
authority.
Question authority. One of my favorite stickers from my youth. Yes, I still have it, I think. Talking about repairing the land, one of the things that surprised me pleasantly in the book Deep Green Resistance was that at one point they talk about this being a job for the transitioners and for the permaculture wing. And unfortunately, so far, the Deep Green Resistance folks say, they're getting it wrong. We have a local transition Carborough Chapel Hill community that is a group of wonderful, dedicated people. Absolutely wonderful people. But in Deep Green Resistance, I was so delighted to see, you know, the transitioners being invoked, but then disappointed and concerned to read that that in Bloomington, Indiana, a Peak Oil Task Force issued a report that was titled Redefining Prosperity, Energy Descent, and Community Resilience. And that report recognizes that that area does not have enough agricultural land to feed the population. But they claim that there was enough land within the city using labor-intensive cultivation methods to feed everyone on a basic, mostly vegetarian diet. But what Keith says is that they don't understand, and remember, she is a farmer, they don't understand that soil is not just dirt. It's not an inert medium that needs nothing in order to keep producing food for humans. Soil is alive, and it is kept alive by perennial polycultures, forests and prairies. The permanent cover protects it from sun, rain, and wind. The constant application of dead grass and leaves adds carbon and nutrients. And the root systems that are crucial for the soil's survival provide habitat for the microfauna that make land life possible.
As a side note, I would mention that the topsoil, which is the part of the soil that actually does the growing, is being lost at a phenomenal rate, and wish I could remember the exact amount, but it's being lost because we're not paying attention to it. We just merrily
go
along.
It's just dirt,
right? Yeah, it's just dirt. We'll just toss some fertilizer on there if there's nothing. If we're having a problem, and a little pesticide, and have it waste away, and it's being eroded away by wind and water running down the great rivers and blowing away across the land. So we
one of the things we're going to try to do is we're going to try to bring in some of the some permaculturists from around here to talk one day about this issue in the land, because there's a lot of knowledge and expertise out there that hasn't been tapped yet. One of the things that Keith warns about is, she said, to be kind of wary of claims that, you know, how many people can be supported per acre in urban landscapes, because it's more about more than just acreage. So if you, you know, make this kind of calculations, you need to consider that the soil in garden beds needs permanent cover. And where will that mulch come from? The soil needs to eat. Where will the organic material and minerals come from? And people need to eat. We can't live on the thin calories of vegetables, no matter how organic, to which 50,000 nerve-damaged Cubans can attest. And so far, she says, transitioners, even though many of them have permaculture background, they seem unaware of the biological constraints of soil and plants, which are, after all, living creatures with physical needs. In the end, the only closed loops that are actually closed are the perennial polycultures that this planet naturally organizes, the communities that agriculture has destroyed. But once again, the individual undertaking is wonderful, but it's not going to make the difference to the fate of our planet. There's a lot more to it. And the best hope for this planet lies in the restoration of grasslands and forests. And we need to stop with these monocultures. Perennials, if you're a gardener, by the way, remember that perennials build soil, and carbon is the building block. Perennials build soil. Annuals deplete it. Repair, according to the Deep Green Resistance folks, needs to be the main goal of the environmental movement. We have the technology, the know-how for prairie and forest restoration. We need to use it. And they point out that, you know, the grasses and trees will do much of the work for us. We just need to help them along a little.
Get them started and get out of the way.
Yes, something like that. Help where's needed. I'm not going to go in right now to the discussion about animals, because there is some differences that Deep Green Resistance has with the mostly, you know, the plant-based diet, with a purely plant-based diet. But we'll save that for another time. Deep Green Resistance and Human Cultures. This is one of the things. This is what is going to be harder, perhaps, than repairing the earth, because most of us have been raised from our birth to accept the dominant culture, the dominant ideology of our time. You know, we don't question it. We assume and accept that this is doing what's right for us, to help us survive, to protect us. Unfortunately, I just don't think that's true. I no longer believe it. I no longer believe in this civilization. And bringing the civilization down does not necessarily mean, you know, we have to, live like some science fiction, futuristic, post-apocalyptic scenario. It does mean, though, we have to learn to do with less, all of us. One of the things that surprised me about this book is that they talk in here about militias. And I was not aware of how rapidly sort of right-wing militias are growing in this country. The authors suggest that a true people's militia of the sort that was, you know, written into the Constitution in our, you know, at the beginnings of this country, that we could create a militia that would be sworn to uphold human rights. And they warn that if the only people holding the guns and having military power are the ones with the worst values, the ones in service to, you know, the corporate mega monster, then we may wind up being very, very sorry. So this is something we, progressives and radicals, need to be thinking about. Most of us consider ourselves nonviolent. It's certainly something I've grappled with in my lifetime. I was brought up with guns and assumed my father was military, and I assumed that there was a place for guns until I got older, and then I realized that guns were for killing, for injuring and killing, and I decided to do away with them in my life. But throughout human history, there has been warfare, and there will continue to be warfare and guns. And perhaps we need to think about what kind of a military or militia we would want. Again, they would need to be sworn to uphold human rights, to protect life, not to destroy it. Currently, too much of our, you know, military might is used to destroy. Deep Green Resistance recognizes the necessity of some militant action. If we had enough people for a real mass movement or enough time to build one, then we could shut down the activities that are destroying this planet using only our human bodies. People armed with nothing but courage. And that's the way segregation was ended in the South, although there are those who are trying to bring it back. That's what pulled down the Berlin Wall, too. Enough of us could shut down oil refineries, coal plants, the tar sands, the strip mines, the clear cuts. But we don't have that kind of mass numbers to do that. So we need to think about what it will take. And this is the question on which the world may depend. Are we, each of us, willing to accept the only strategy left to us? Are we willing to set aside our last dreams of a brave uprising of millions? We all need hope. We need to have hope, and we need to believe that there can be a change for the better. But unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. It doesn't look like we're going to see the mass uprising. So if we have fewer, are we still willing to put our lives, our bodies, our hearts and minds on the line for our beliefs? Whatever you love, Keith says, it is under assault. So we need to take a deep breath and figure out how we are going to fight it. Deep Green Resistance is, and I quote, a fight against a singular enemy, industrial civilization. And this makes it different from every other struggle in history. It has some similarities with the original Luddites, who were right. It has some overlap with indigenous peoples' struggles. But it has some very significant differences, too. What they call decisive ecological warfare strategy is what DGR recommends. And it has only one goal: to disrupt and dismantle industrial civilization and thereby remove the ability of the powerful to exploit the powerless and destroy the planet. It's not just about trying to change consciousness, not trying to get press, but not after a new government or a seat at the political table. Those things may be going on alongside, but that's not what this is about. This is about trying to stop the burning of fossil fuels and the industrial-scale destruction of life support systems all over the planet. So I'd like to wrap up again. I really recommend you read this book, because it is an important book. The coming energy descent and biotic collapse, in whatever proportions, do not have to mean mass starvation and devastation. It's up to us whether we starve or eat. It's up to us whether we let the energy that is left in society go to be used to produce more useless crap for the wealthy, or whether it will go to transport basic sustenance while local economies struggle into existence. Are you willing to tell the wealthy that they can't have a personal mountain of junk? Not while there are human beings dying for lack of food? The food supply, as it is structured for corporate profits. We need to change that. We need to rethink that. And we're going to have to close now. So I want to finish with this quote from the book. Whatever work you are called to do, the world can wait no longer. Power in all its versions, the arrogant, the sadistic, the stupid, is poised to kill every last living thing. If we falter, it will win. Gather your heart and all its courage. Fletch love into an arrow that will not bend and take aim. It starts now. And this is about love. This is about what each of us loves. Do we love our children, our grandchildren? Do we love this planet enough to take action? In the time it has taken me to read this, another species has dropped into extinction. Another native elder has died and taken with them a language that is now lost. Another child has died for lack of clean water, drinking water. In the time it takes to argue with ourselves, to decide whether we will take action, many lives have been destroyed and species. But there is still time for us to decide, for us to take some action. Talk it over with your friends and neighbors. Think about it. Read. Think hard about whether we are willing, as a nation, to do what it takes to save us from the destruction of this planet. There is no need to despair, but there is a need to become brave, to grow strong, so that we can save ourselves and the future for our children and grandchildren. And with that, we're wrapping up another Wilf wake-up call.
Yeah, this has been really on the wake-up end of the wake-up call. If you're interested in checking out Deep Green Resistance, you can Google it or Yahoo it, whichever. Go to the webpage that has it. There's an extensive excerpt, which is basically either the introduction or chapter one.
Oh, where is that?
In Deep Green.
Online.
Deep, okay. You can go online and find that. Or you can stop by any bookstore.
Yes, but any please bookstore. Don't shop Amazon or Barnes & Noble or... Go get it at a local bookstore. Support a local bookstore. Have them order it for you. You can do that online, too. Go to Internationalist.
Right. And, you can go to directly into the bookstore if you like the ones with bricks and sticks, holding them together. We want to remind you that this is WCOMLP. Chapel Hill and Carrboro, and this is Wilf's Wake Up Call. You can find the station website at wcomfm.org. You can find Wilf's website at triangle.wilpf.org, and you can find the website for for Internationalist Books Bookstore at internationalistbooks.org. This is Dick Paddock signing off for Tana Hartman, and we'll give you a little, I hope, a levity. I hope you enjoy it. A little Dave Lippmann.
Yeah. Jim, your 401 is done. Don't know where it's gone. Why don't you go where Enron sits? Putting on a Ritz. Come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend your last two bits. Putting on a Ritz. W sold his Harkin stock for $4. Price slid to 125. Shareholders scream and holler. SEC said that's a fake sale, but they failed to nail the governor. There it sits. Systems on the fritz. Have you seen the well-to-do up and down Park Avenue? W's in the White House now, no accounting for just how. W demands high standards. Dub and Dick, of course, were slandered. Yes, they may be slime, but it was the perfect crime. And if you will hearken back to Halliburton, that's when Cheney's business...